You're listening to the UCB Longform Conversations podcast, in-depth conversations with performers and teachers from the best alternative comedy theater on the planet. In today's episode, the podcast will take a break from our normal interview format, instead presenting a palate cleanser, where UCB teachers and staff present official UCB news and updates, focus on a specific element of long-form improv, and offer experimental one-off episodes. The opinions expressed in this episode are those of the comedians talking and don't necessarily reflect the opinions of UCB Theater or Training Center.
Warning. What you're about to hear is an extremely nerdy conversation about long-form improv comedy.
Welcome to the UCB Long-Form Conversations podcast. This is a palate cleanser episode.
Palate cleansed.
Palate cleanse.
Hope you like mouth noises in your ear.
Today we are talking about the Lady Jam. And we are four hosts. We're not all of the hosts of the Lady Jam here in New York City, but we are four of the hosts. I'm Molly Thomas.
I'm Lily Dew.
I'm Jess Morgan.
And I'm Monique Moses. This is fun. I love being in a very tiny room with you ladies.
Yeah.
This is really great.
Yeah.
Oh, we're hearing like
Santa?
We're hearing reindeer on the ceiling.
Yeah, we're all getting presents.
Whoa.
For sure sounds like Santa on the roof right now.
It's probably Studio A, too. I've booked that studio.
Ooh, I hope they all book.
I hope they all book.
So we wanted to talk about the Lady Jam, which is every month, Friday at midnight, a rotating week depending on our availability. And what is the Lady Jam?
It's just so much fun. First and foremost, my goodness, a bunch of really great ladies come together at the amazing time of midnight on Friday.
Yeah, magic.
And magic hour.
Witching.
Yeah, witching hour. And we, do a jam.
Yeah, it's great. Anybody can come and watch. And if you identify as female, you are more than welcome to put your name in a really sparkly bucket.
Yes.
And once your name is in that bucket, we draw names out, and the hosts jam with the people who put their names in the buckets, the audience members. And between each set, we have our own version of a palate cleanser.
Yes.
Dance party.
We dance our faces off.
Yeah. And we often have female artists. We have some great music in between. So
yes,
it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, that's true.
Just a celebration of womanhood and a female. Female identity.
Yeah.
It's a great time.
In a supportive environment.
Very supportive.
Yeah.
Oh, all levels, too.
Yeah,
that's
anyone's
one big
welcome.
Thing. Anyone's welcome.
If you've never been on stage before and done it, it does not matter. We're here to celebrate you. It's the most fun jam.
Yes.
Yeah.
Not that we're ranking them, but here I am.
Not that we're ranking them, but we're the best.
Yeah. If we had to rank them, we would be number one.
Do you guys remember the first time you went to the Lady Jam?
I do. Yeah. It wasn't like a crazy, like a eventful time, but it was like cool to see. I didn't know that it existed, so it was really cool to see the community.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I know that sometimes we'll have like a yearly Lady Jam or like some sort of amazing anniversary Lady Jam, but like I just went on a regular Friday and it was like a lot of fun. It was very busy and it was at Chelsea and it was cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember mine, specifically a moment when I think Brandon Scott Jones was the token dude for that episode.
Oh yeah, there used to be a token male,
which
and
we're
one,
like
and we don't do that anymore.
No,
we
don't
need it. Yeah.
But it was fine and fun when it happened and he was so wonderful at it, and I think that he was doing a scene with Morgan Grace Jarrett, and he was like some like squirrely horrible guy in a department store, and she labeled him Dank. She named him Dank, and I was like, that's the best improv move I've ever seen. And I was, you know, a doe-eyed 201 student, and I was like, how can you name someone so fast, so good?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and then I got up there and did improv, and I don't remember what I did, but I remember what I saw.
I don't know if I remember my first one. I remember going to one that was just like packed, and this was when Abra was the DJ.
Yeah,
and I don't remember if Shannon was there because Shannon used to be one of the hosts, Shannon O'Neill, but it was just huge, and it was all women, and Yeah, it was, like, I'm sure it was really long because there were so many people there.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it used to be, like, an event because also it started in, like, late 2012 or early 2013, and I think a lot has changed since then, and it's still changing, but, like, representation of women on stage was... Yeah. More limited. There were fewer female performers on house teams. And mm-hmm. I think this felt like such a necessary thing and like an outlet and a place for women to just play with other women and see mm-hmm. other funny women and not be on a team with seven men.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
For sure. But it's still great. Like, I think we're transitioning to the new theater, so we're still getting our bearings. And I think people don't realize that Lady Jam is still popping, it's still happening.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, it's so interesting to watch it on this new stage because of the not performance element, but like
theatrical.
Yeah.
It's a theater.
Yeah, because it's such a theater, you know?
It's such a good opportunity for students who are coming up, I think, to get on that stage and mm-hmm. feel how it feels to perform on that stage,
yeah, yeah.
especially because classes exist in a classroom and you may have your class show at the Beast yeah. or I don't know which classes have their shows at Hell's Kitchen, but
it's kind of random.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
sometimes 201 or 301 will be there.
Yeah. It's beneficial to everyone to be on that stage and say, oh, whoa, this is like how my voice works on this stage. This is how you interact with someone on this stage.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so why don't we go back? So Lily mentioned that when the Lady Jam began, there weren't as many women necessarily represented. I know at first, I know there have been like different drop-off points. So at a certain point at like 401, there was like a drop off of women taking classes, mm-hmm. And I think it kept moving up. So I don't know if it was like 201 or 301 before that, but I don't think that's the case anymore in classes.
Oh, great.
Like I don't think there's a drop off, and I teach here at UCB. I teach 201 and 301, and I would say, with the exception or one or two classes I've ever taught, all classes are either that I teach, and I'm a woman, so maybe I attract women to my class, but mine are either 50-50 or majority women.
Oh, wow.
Which I think is really interesting.
Yeah, it's yeah. great.
But why don't we maybe talk about experiences that we had in mm-hmm. classes or coming up where maybe as a woman you felt other or mm. something happened? That, yeah. Or if you guys want to talk about being a woman of color, mm-hmm. if there are, because those instances would be
yeah, Jess
different.
Morgan.
Hello. Yes, Jessica Morgan.
I'm just kidding. I'm kidding.
I was speaking to Lillian.
I know
is
you
it
were.
Worthwhile identifying ourselves? I'm a first-gen Chinese-American.
Ah, yes. I'm a first-gen Caribbean-Canadian.
Yeah. Yeah. Technically, maybe second-gen. I don't know. I think yeah. I misuse it.
I don't know.
I didn't have a female teacher for a long time going through. Mm-hmm. Maybe my third advanced study class was my first female teacher.
Whoa.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wait, say that again?
My third advanced study class was my first female teacher.
Wow. So it's seven classes in?
Yeah.
Yeah. All the primary program, so 101 to 401 was all men. And then Lydia Hensler was my first ASP.
My first ass. See, I had Betsy Stover for 101.
Ooh,
I had Shannon O'Neill for 301.
Whoa, lucky woman.
So I had, and then I had Porter Mason for 201 and 401.
Mm. Honestly, at that time, too, it was just what class I could get into before
exactly.
it went
yes.
out. Like 30 right. seconds, it was yeah. sold out. So sometimes it's really tough.
Mm-hmm. And whatever worked with my schedule.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I had a pretty, I would say, armored experience. I don't want to immediately put myself on the defense, but I had, well, just in terms of, like, all of the male energy of the theater, I yeah. felt very well protected and, like, I could move forward really easily mm. because I had Chelsea Clark for 101, I had Shannon for 401, I had Abra for my advanced study. Mm. And then I also, I'm just going to give a little shout-out, had the best all-female indie improv team, Wicked City, and we formed so early mm. and had incredible resources and just people supporting us. So I, while many of my classes, I was one of under five females in the mm-hmm. class. It was like, yeah, this is where I learned the tools that I'm going to play with this team that I feel very supported by, heavily supported by. But, yeah, I think my 301 had three girls in it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And however many guys that would make it, 13 guys?
Yeah.
I had an advanced study class Kevin Hines taught, and there were four women and 12 dudes. And in that class, I may have even talked about this note before on this podcast, but it was so important to me that I'll do it again. There were two different times in group games where Kevin stopped us. And this was my, I don't know, like fourth advanced study class, I think. So I had taken like 8 or 9, 10 classes already at this point. So we'd be in the middle of a group game and Kevin stopped us and said, "You guys, did you notice that Molly just made this move and nobody listened to it? And that's why this group game isn't taking off, or why it doesn't make sense, is because Molly made the move that needed to be made and nobody listened." And I went, "Oh my God, holy shit." Because I had never noticed that happening before. I just didn't realize. And I'm more likely to, like, I grew up in the Midwest, oldest to two younger brothers. I don't know, whatever my makeup is. But I think I'm much more likely to, or at least historically, to be like accommodating and like, "Oh, I'm sorry, I don't want to, I don't know, apologize.
Let's just move forward," however that is.
Yeah, exactly. And not realizing, like, oh, sometimes the scene feels like shit because I'm being ignored. Because it's not because I don't know what to do. It's because I knew what to do and I did it and nobody listened to me.
Whoa.
Yeah, dude.
I think it's so valuable to, like, know your worth and know the value of what you have to offer and that your ideas are good. But I think when you're starting out sometimes, as a woman especially, there's all this, like, internalized sexism and just, like, stuff that you have bore over the years. I think it's easier to, like, doubt yourself. And you're like, if I get talked over, I would have been like, "Oh, okay, well, I guess my idea is bad." And then it took me, like, years to, like, later on be like, "No, my idea is good and you're wrong." Like,
right.
Which is nice because, like, yeah, like, to have the confidence. I remember, like, years after I was a house performer, I was in a practice group and I walked in as, like, a doctor to a medical scene and a guy was, like, walked on after me, was like, "Sorry, that's my nurse."
Ooh.
And afterwards, no, but afterwards, I was, like, so pissed, and I think in the past I wouldn't have said anything. And then afterwards, I was just, like, after practice, I talked to him. I was, like, "Hey, that is not the move I intended. Do not just label me your assistant," whatever, especially because I'm a woman, whatever. And then, like, a year later or so, he talked to me again about it online briefly and was like, "That was helpful."
Yeah.
But I wouldn't have been able to do that when I first started out.
Teaching all the time. If there is a medical scene and there's a man and a woman, the man is always labeled the doctor and the woman is always labeled the nurse, and it drives me fucking nuts. And or if there are two women, sometimes even two, I don't know, like, that feels like the most gendered job that we have, that we see in improv, and it just drives me crazy.
I mean, I understand where that instinct comes from, because sometimes you just want to make the scene seem as familiar to people who are watching as possible, right?
Yeah.
But
I think it's even deeper than that. I think it's not even realizing what's happening.
Yeah, I don't think it was malicious at all. I don't think he was like, "Screw you."
No,
like,
that's what I mean. It's
like,
okay, I want to make this as clear as possible.
Yeah.
We all think this.
Yeah.
I mean, we don't, but, like,
somewhere in the deep recesses of our brains, we immediately acknowledge that this is the truth.
Yeah.
This is the easiest truth to...
Easiest truth, so that we can work on the game of it.
Yeah.
But, I mean, we got to start. We got to do better. You guys, come
harder
on.
Truths.
Yeah.
Complicated truths.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
I think that a big lesson for me coming up that felt like... I don't know if it was necessarily gendered, but I do associate this with, I don't know, just... taking crap all of the time. There was a period in time when I had a really hard time identifying unusual behavior because I was just so used to bullshit reigning over me and being like, okay. And that was a note that I got from Abra, actually. She was like, I know a lot in scenes, quotes around "I know." So something unusual happens or is said and I say, "I know," and just like allow them to be unusual in a way that isn't calling them out because it's just not ingrained in my Midwestern accommodating lifestyle. Someone's unusual, we just kind of quietly let them roll by. And, mm-hmm. like, as I feel like that's ingrained in my female experience, like, just, like, let unusual things happen at you, absorb them, but don't comment on them. Like, it's not worth starting a thing over.
Wow.
And it bled into my improv in a way that made it so that scenes could not start.
Wow.
And, like, once I got that note, it freed up the possibility to, like, halt moments and say, this is weird. This is truly weird. And it doesn't matter if you think it is or not. Like, I'm feeling free enough in my confidence to label things as unusual and call them out and make noise.
Yeah, and I mean, yeah, part of, like, moving a scene forward and calling things out is, like, being assertive, calling stuff out, addressing stuff, which in, like, the day-to-day behavior of, like, being a woman is not always, like, looked kindly upon, is, yeah. like, bitchy, mm-hmm. aggressive,
yeah.
bossy.
Ooh, the word that yeah. I hate. Bossy, bossy. I hate that word. Yeah.
Bossy, bossy.
Yeah.
Bossy.
Well, we solved that.
Yeah.
Well, we fixed yeah. it.
We yeah. fixed it.
Yeah, so that was, I think that was a big part of my experience. I don't think that, but yeah, like I said, I had it pretty easy in terms of an even allocation of, like, female and male teachers in my experience, and then, like, having an indie group that I felt really tied to and felt like I could really try unusual things with and not be judged and have the space to really take time to discover. Did anybody have that experience?
Yeah. Or, like, mentors in the system.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Yeah. I didn't feel awkward being, like, one of a few women in my class. Of course, I felt awkward being one of a few people of color in my class.
Mm-hmm.
But I also grew up that way, so it wasn't, like, it didn't stop me from enjoying playing. For some people it does, you know, it's like it can really, like, stifle your instincts and stuff like that, but yeah, I felt that through the system I had a lot of mentors and I had a lot of people outside of the system to kind of, like, help me feel good about taking classes. Like, I was in an indie team early on called Nobody's Token, which was an all people of color indie team, and just, like, you know, people like Keisha Zoller, mm-hmm. who's a friend and teammate now, but was like my life, my bright light, you know, my mentor shining throughout the system. She was there, and just, like, all of Doppelganger. So, you know, Sashir, yeah. Nicole Byer, like, I really looked up to them. I love Chelsea Clark. Just, like, all these women that you could watch and emulate and
yeah.
follow.
Yeah, I felt very supported by my indie team, which was with Vince Moore and Chris Wiener. It was called Pompadour. Mm-hmm. And that was, like, a safe, nice space to play. Speaking to mostly about mentorship, I don't feel like I had any mentors, and that's okay. But, like, the teachers that I had coming up and the mm-hmm. people that I met, like, were mostly, like, men and whatever. And I think it's hard for them to see themselves in you if
yeah.
you don't look like them.
Mm-hmm.
And also
the biggest sigh you ever heard in this room,
you know, because I get when yeah. when a guy looks in a classroom and he's like, God, he reminds me of a young me, and, like, takes someone under the wing.
Yeah.
And then I also think, I don't know if we can touch upon this, maybe cut this
you
later.
Can I know exactly what you're gonna say.
I think boundaries between teachers and students were less clearly defined then. We didn't have HR then, we do now, which is great. But I think if it was a older male teacher taking interest, would it be only sexually, or right. would, like, is there
true mentorship possibilities?
Yeah, is do they aspire to that, or
mm-hmm.
do they only view you as someone to potentially date?
Yeah.
I realized the other day in talking about this, I went back and looked and I was like, oh, yeah, my teachers were women or married guys.
Mm.
So there was never, it just, like, wasn't even something that occurred to me that there could be that tension because nobody
that experience,
yeah. Just, again, because of scheduling and, you know, that was never my experience, or with coaches or anything. But yeah, there even I remember meeting people sometimes. I mean, I guess that's just how the world is. But if it's somebody who's ahead of you, it's like, wait, is this person, does this person think I'm good? Do they,
yeah.
Or do they think, or is this just how they are?
And in an art form where there's nothing solid, like it's like the second we're done, it slips through our fingers and we have no proof. Like other people's validation of us can be tilted in a really extreme way, I think, because it's not like you get a paper back or you get a review on a a piece of writing that you did and it's on paper what you created, or on a wall that you, or a sculpture that you made. Like there's no tangible proof of it. So other people's opinions, other people's perception and view of what you create can become so powerful in this community.
Yeah. I also my 301, famously for the people in that class, there was a guy who was from another country, and I think he was very self-conscious about the language barrier, which I think is a whole separate episode. I can't imagine how people do improv in a language that's not their first language.
Yeah, they're
truly
quite brilliant.
Yeah, if you're doing that, don't worry
ever stop.
About it. Yeah, like don't stop. Don't worry about it. It's awesome. But this specific guy, the way it would manifest itself was I would end up being in scenes with him and he would go, I'm not going to rape you.
No.
Yeah. Honestly, that's nice because he's not going
because
to.
Because he wasn't going to. Yeah. Truly out of nowhere. And it happened many times. I'm not going to rape you.
Oh, man. Oh, man. And okay, so I'm going to ask kind of a nitty gritty. How, as a 301 student, did you handle that moment? And how, can I ask, did your
teacher? It was Shannon,
yeah, okay.
Fortunately. I think Shannon was just like, no.
Okay.
I can see that.
No.
Just like mid-scene.
No.
No.
Yeah. But for me, I think that it was just like, huh? I don't remember realizing how insane it was, or at least not the first time, because I was just like, I'm trying to figure out how to get out of base reality.
Yeah. You don't have the skill set to manage all of that at once at that level.
Yeah. Yeah.
I wonder about that, because I feel like I love the podcast and I love reminiscing with friends, but a lot of what we do when we talk about improv is reminisce on something that happened. Is like, oh man, that was nuts. And it's like, but what happened in the moment? How did the teacher respond? How do you remember feeling and responding? Because I know there's so many people who listen to this who are looking to see themselves in us and we see ourselves in them in that way where it's like, how as a 201, when game is a whisper of a reality, how did I handle this awkward exchange? Or how did it make me feel? How did the other people in the room react? Because I know more often than not in situations like that, when I was coming up, and even to this day, if it's really out of the blue, I get embarrassed. Mm-hmm. My face gets red, and I'll just shut up. And I just won't continue. Yeah. Like, that was my, gut response. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to balance what needs to be done in that moment.
As a teacher, I find that that's a huge part of what I'm doing is not policing scenes, but I'm watching, because I do 201 and 301. So every scene, I'm basically side coaching to help them find game.
Yeah.
But just as much, I'm looking for things that may be offensive so that I can stop and go like, you didn't say that. Let's keep going.
Okay.
And it's exhausting.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
But there's tons that I don't catch. Yeah. No, I'm sure.
Yeah. I don't particularly remember any negative exchanges like that in class. I am blessed that that didn't happen to me. I remember my classes being fun. Few and far between, though, because I couldn't afford them.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, I mean, fortunately, I didn't have a situation like that.
Truly, there are things like that. Maybe not as bad as that. But
I mean,
like,
yeah, that one's so bad.
It took me years to realize that, maybe that wasn't appropriate. Like small exchanges or like little things that happened to me in scenes that at the time I'd be like, I guess that's normal or I guess that's my fault. And years later, I'm like, wait a second.
And if that shapes you as an improviser at that early phase, like knocking down that shape, that like calcification of that idea is better or I guess that is my fault is really hard to do.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. One thing I notice about the Lady Jam that I really enjoy is that the subject matter of a lot of scenes like gender doesn't really matter. Mm-hmm. Whereas when you're on a team, sometimes you like play roles need to be played or you feel like they need to be played.
Yeah.
But I feel like at the jam, like it's a real fun free for all.
Yeah. I remember even early on, I think I took a workshop with Megan Gray at the Magnet, maybe, that was for all women. Mm-hmm. And when she was like saying like, oh, like define the relationship in the scene or whatever, I think she even said like, I don't know if it was her that said this, but she was like, all right, yeah, it can be like a husband and a wife or a wife and a wife and a husband, like it doesn't matter. Yeah. It's like 2012 or whatever. And I think about that now, how like so often, because like we do live in like recognizable scenarios and stuff, but how often we fall back on these, but we all know like gay couples that are married and stuff. And yet somehow we don't play that like as if like that might start to be a new, we play like male and even that stuff can be like limiting.
Yeah.
This is unrelated to gender at all, but I had a guy in a class, I think a 201 class the other day, go, wait, those scenes, everybody got in a car to go someplace else? Mm. He's like, if I got on a skateboard to go from one place to another, is that cool? He's like, because I've always lived in New York and I've never driven a car from one place to another. And I was like, oh my God, yeah, that's because so many, it's the same thing.
Identifiable like, experience, yeah.
Right. Like so many people grew up in the suburbs or so many people grew up with a car or we assume, I guess it's that same thing of like, oh yeah, just like a husband and wife is like an easy or like a male doctor and a female nurse.
Yeah.
We get in a car to go someplace. Yeah. But if you really look at what your day-to-day life is like living in New York City.
Yeah.
It's not that.
Yeah, and the situations are the norm for a reason, but I think by making them the norm forever, doing them all the time, it eliminates other people's experiences. Like, yes. I hate that, like, yeah, like a queer person in a class always is in, like, a hetero relationship in scenes, and they do it all the time coming up.
I even feel like with what you were saying, Molly, I've gone with teams to like festivals, which is so fun. If you're like on an indie team and coming up, scrap up a few bucks and go to a festival somewhere and just get to know other people doing improv. But I remember, I think with Wicked City, doing some scenes where we initiated holding a subway pole, like non-verbally. And like I think there was just like a general lack of understanding from the audience of where we could possibly be.
So funny.
But it's the experience that we, and even that, like even a New York experience when you travel looks different and how we allow those norms. But then it's like the norms help build the base reality, but it's lacking those or knocking those down. What is normal? What is everyday? And every, like, all possible, like, it's all open for possibility.
Well, I think it's worth reevaluating because a lot of that stuff is built on, like, cliche and stuff. Like, if everything was, like, a sitcom from the 90s, it would all be, like, hot wives and dumb husbands.
Yeah.
Although I do love playing a dumb husband.
I'll be your hot wife.
You're good at it. Another thing is, it's like, and I see this in sketch a lot too, and I'm kind of guilty of this as well, but like men being the unusual thing. Mm-hmm. And I feel like when you are on an all female team or you go to the female all lady jam, it's like you see women can be strange and fun and goofy and
some
kooky.
Some weird scenes at the lady jam that have just delighted my soul.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like
this could never happen anywhere else, but they just feel. These people feel safe for it. But it's so many of sketches feel like, but darling, you're crazy.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Or like women can't be the assholes in the scene.
Yeah.
Oh,
because then we're afraid of being bitches. Yeah, and all that
Bossy.
Stuff.
Bossy.
Oh, don't say it out loud.
Don't say it out loud. I hate it so much.
Bitch, bossy.
The base reality of scenes during the Lady Jam is different than in a mixed group. Too. I think, you know, and it's funny because sometimes I think like, oh, are we limiting ourselves? Like there are a lot of like brunch scenes and sleepover scenes and there's a lot of stuff like that. And so I'll think, I don't know, sometimes it's like, oh, come on, guys, we're more than this.
Actually, like, you're right. But we should have some scenes at NASA and stuff like that.
Yeah. But then I don't know.
I'm planning my improv now, as I often do.
Plan those. But also, I think there's a comfort there to this can be the base reality and it's not the unusual thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I like that. It's nice also to have more diverse improvisers on stage to bring the base reality of their situations that, like, because a bunch of guys aren't going to do that brunch scene
without
probably.
making a woman so weird.
You're right.
I have a question for you guys. Do you find that your improv style changes when you are with all women or not?
I'll hit that one. I feel like yes.
100%.
And I feel like the biggest... The easiest thing to label that I change a lot when I improvise with just women, but one of the biggest changes is I feel very comfortable with all women on stage doing big group scenes. And so I will initiate, like, okay, you bunch of barnyard animals, like something dumb, it doesn't matter, or even not something dumb, but I feel comfortable improvising with a bunch of women on stage all at once more. So I would never do that if there were a bunch of dudes on stage, because the probability that I get trampled over verbally is much more likely. And maybe that just translates to the jam and also just coming up with Wicked City, because we would if we ever spoke over each other, it would be an hour of apologies afterwards. But I do notice that I'm more comfortable on stage improvising with a bunch of women at once than a bunch of men at once.
I was going to say no, because I think I'm pretty set in my ways, and also the role I play is kind of not like so, it's not always at odds with a guy, because I do a lot of taking care of a show and whatever, and that can fit wherever. But then I just remembered that Jess and I just did a tour last weekend at Bowdoin.
We touched knees just
then. Yes, we must tell.
We saw them.
And it was an all-female tour, which they asked for, which was great. And I guess I haven't played with all women in a while, and I realized, and this has changed over the years, but, like, I had such an easier time going blue, so, like, doing, like, sexual humor with a group of all women than even touring with a group of guys who are my close, trusted friends, married, whatever, because when I'm on stage now, and I think that has changed, like, I know I can go blue, I know it'll be funny, I like it, but, like, I just don't feel like miming a blowjob to a guy. I don't like what that communicates to the audience seeing it. But if it's with a group of women, then I feel okay showing that and going there.
Lily stuck a leg of a chair up her butt in the show we did. And it was so funny.
But not if there are guys there.
No.
I definitely change. Like I was saying earlier, I play roles where depending on who I'm playing with. And if it's an all-female group, I'm usually playing the unusual person or the crazy person, and that's my favorite type of person to play. But then when I'm in like a co-ed group, often I find myself relegating myself to roles that sort of like help support the game or help support whoever is the crazy person. But that's actually not true. Like Astronomy Club, we often play whatever needs to happen. And that's why I love playing with them. Mm-hmm. But I find that sometimes I still to myself.
Mm. Molly?
I guess it's most noticeable for me hosting, because I host the Lady Jam a lot when I'm there, and I'm at my most brash hosting the Lady Jam.
I could see that, yeah.
And I love it.
You're so good at it.
Yeah.
I love just being like, fuck everything. Like, right after the election, coming together for the Lady Jam, you know, 2 weeks later or whatever, felt like a very powerful, politically charged action. Felt really important for, you know, like the Women's March but it was before the Women's March. I'm not saying we gave them the idea, but I am just saying it was before. But it felt really important to come together and just say, this is our space for the next hour, and we deserve to be here. So Yeah, certainly hosting, and then I'm sure that translates to performance, to just being the most out there version of myself.
I have a question to you guys. How do you feel about presentation as a woman on stage? How you dress, how you appear?
Yeah, it's hard. Like, for me, I love to wear makeup, and then I wear a lot of makeup. And I'm also, like, as an improviser, I'm like, I shouldn't be wearing this much makeup as an improviser. So it's like a weird sense of I feel like I should be more plain in this role we're playing than I want to be. I know that's kind of like not what you mean, but it's also like something something I struggle with.
I find a similar balance there. I feel at my best when I, you know, my hair looks a certain way, my makeup's on, and I'm dressed well, and I feel more confident on stage like that. But there is a part of me that it's like, to be as adaptable as possible into a character, I should look more neutral. Yeah. But then I also find that it's a little bit of a stick it to the schlubby culture for me to dress nicely, because I like to look nice on stage, and I like to show the audience that I care enough to look nice, because that is how I show them I care. Yeah. It's one of the ways in which
I do.
Do
you ever worry that sometimes you look too pretty to improvise? That's such a dumb thing to say.
I've never had that worry.
No, but like, you know, sometimes people don't take women seriously if they're, you know.
Yeah, so I think about that. And I think about coming up, there were like two women on every Herald team, and they all kind of dressed very down, casual, not
always
a lot of makeup, kind of blended
always
in. And now, like, sometimes I will want to neutralize so that I think I can be more adaptable, palatable. But in my day-to-day life, I dress pretty femme. I dress up. I wear inconvenient things. And so I will make an effort to do that for shows, even if truly sometimes it inhibits my performance, because I get a little in my head about it, because I can feel the audience being like, why is she in a dress?
Yeah.
And I just do it to show people that, like, a different kind of look can be funny. Like a high femme woman can be funny. Because, yeah, again, like, that's me adopting someone else's mindset to think that that is weird to be dressed up, when that can be very normal for us. And I'm like, it is weird for me to see a guy go on stage and do a show in cargo shorts and shoes that are falling apart and like a stained shirt. And I'm like, that is not normal to me, but I'm taking it in from another perspective where I'm like, I guess that's normal, and I guess that's how I should look too.
Yeah.
For me, I think I don't want to look scrubby. So I want to be wearing clean things that are flattering. I don't want to be thinking about like, is my belly showing in this or something for me? Because that's where I'm self-conscious. But I also think to myself, like, if I want to, that's the area where I'm self-conscious, guys. Yeah.
Just Molly. Yeah. No one else.
Okay. my thighs.
Everywhere. But I think to myself, like, okay, if I'm going to roll around on the floor, if I was going to do the wheelbarrow where I had my hands on the floor and somebody else picked up my legs, would this outfit be okay for that?
Yeah.
Or would I feel limited or self-conscious? Like, would my shirt fly up or whatever?
Yeah.
That's great. I'm going to start dressing like that in the mornings. Like, can I do the wheelbarrow?
That's my improv outfit test.
That's so funny.
Oh, yeah, I always have, like, shorts on under a dress and stuff.
Yeah.
I'm prepared for that stuff.
Yeah, I like to not be limited. I don't want to have to worry, can I do this move and what I'm wearing? But I also want to walk on stage feeling confident about how I look.
Yeah.
But then also we had show, like, when we were on Herald night, I'm coming from work, and I'm coming from, like, auditions all day. Unless if I'm, like, going to bring a full outfit for improvising, I have to.
I also want to, like, be able to perform, like, with my bra strap exposed or whatever, without being sexualized. So be it.
Yeah. I've also found that when we're on tour for Tourco, the like, we're on stage for 90 minutes, so you really can't be too inhibited. But also, if there's a mic pack, because I recently did a show where I had a mic pack and I knew I was going to be mic'd and I did not dress appropriately. And I spent, just because the pants weren't the right kind of pants to, like, clip into, yeah. and I spent the entire show thinking about it. And, like, it fell off a few times, and it's like that takes the audience out, too. We don't have to worry about that at Hell's Kitchen, but it is your body is your instrument, and how best can it serve you in this capacity?
Your body is a wonderland.
Your body is your instrument, but it's also, like, a statement. It's like, sometimes I dress up and it does inhibit me, and I'm like, I think that is okay.
Yeah.
See, watching, if I'm watching a performer and I feel like he or she is inhibited, although it's, I would say it's more likely to be she because a guy's going to wear a shirt and pants and whatever. Yeah. But either way, if I feel like somebody, their performance is really inhibited by what they're wearing, then that does bother me. Although yeah. I would say coaching you in Twerko, Lily, I feel like no matter what you're wearing, you just do what needs to be done.
Yeah. I would say the same thing performing with you a ton.
Thank you. Yeah.
I never feel like you're inhibited.
Oh, thank you. I'm always inhibited.
That's the secret.
I've normalized it. Yeah, but I don't know. I think of it just like, yeah, your body is your instrument, but your body also, like, on stage, whether or not you want it to be, like, is political. As a woman of color, you cannot control that the people will see you as a statement, as a reflection of themselves, as a reflection for women of color or whatever. So I'm like, okay, whatever. I will feed into that. I don't know.
I feel like as women of color, we kind of get away with more, maybe fashion-wise, maybe. Has anyone here played with X?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. There's an amazing improviser here at UCB named X, and she doesn't let nothing, you know what I mean, inhibit her when she's wearing whatever she wants to wear, and she's always got her makeup looking great. She has this great hair, and just like, she's just always killing it. But yeah. like, if you put her next to some of our like senior improvisers who are, you know, wearing like a zip-up Old Navy shirt and, you know, chinos.
Yeah.
You know, she does stand out.
Which is not to say that that's wrong.
But I'm just saying it. Right. I'm not saying it's wrong, but I'm saying like...
No, the chinos. I'm saying it's fine.
It's true.
Sorry,
it's
no hate to chinos.
I don't know. I'm just saying that...
She does look spectacular.
She does look spectacular, and I feel like the audience appreciates it. And I know I do when I watch her. Yeah. So. Mm-hmm.
And I do think it's changing. I think, like, when I took class, I think we were taught more, like, you know, you're doing improv, so you want to look more neutral so that you could be any character.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think the language is changing some. Because you want to represent yourself as a person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And if you're a good improviser, then you'll be able to become any character.
Yeah. Yeah. yeah.
And if you're playing with good people, they'll label you as different characters and not always
that's
like...
That's true.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
yeah.
So.
That's very true. And also, like, wherever you fall in your experience as, like, a person and how you identify, I think, dress how you want to dress on stage and let that shine through. Because I know we talked a little bit about how dudes with the shirts and the pants have their, you know, their thing or whatever. But it's like, that doesn't have to be what you're showing us if that's not what you want to show us with. And I don't know that there's a ton of range of what we see, but like, be as comfortable as you need to be within, you know, within the scope of how you feel like you should behave on stage.
We haven't mentioned, and I don't even really have the language for it, people who are not binary.
Yeah, I was just trying to kind of indicate with that, but I was maybe a little too vague.
No, you did as far as like... Coming, like, anybody who identifies as female.
Yeah.
But, you know, we had a trans woman come up to me after the show and say this was my first time out in the world as a woman. And she had taken class in men's clothing as a man. And then this was her first time out. And I thought that was really powerful.
Yeah.
And I've seen her at least twice at the jam. And I also... feel exclusive sometimes, even just the name The Lady Jam.
Yeah, I feel that way too. And I think that's the thing that just has changed. And I think it is worth updating and evaluating so that it includes just, non-binary. I guess it's more like who it's not for, who it is
for. Well, that's
for.
What's difficult.
But, I mean, I've definitely thought about it. I went to a women's college, and that's something that has been an ongoing issue with them for a lot of years. And then I think eventually a few years ago they updated. It's like
do they let in female to male, male to female, non-identifying, like, as a traditionally women's college, how does that work? And I think that, what it becomes is, as long as you are identifying as not male.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
We have an LGBTQ jam, yeah?
The XYZ.
XYZ jam. On Wednesdays.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Not saying that they should be regulated only to that, but I'm just like wondering how we can
open up possibilities. Yes.
Open up the possibility of like.
And yeah, I think it's an ongoing conversation. I think the thing about intersectionality is that like women's experiences are different than men, and then women of color's experience different than white women. Uh-huh. And the more you break it down, so like a non-binary person's experience is different from even a homosexual woman's experiences. And so I think, it is helpful for people to have things more broken down and to meet other people like them to talk about things with. I'm very staccato.
I'm malfunctioned.
I think we're all open to be challenged on that and to move forward and like not let it get stagnant in what the Lady Jam means.
Yeah.
Because I think that title does maybe raise hackles. It's like, that's not it, because that's not it. It's never been in it. That's never been the limit of what it is, and it's never going to be the limit of what it's capable of being. It's so much more than that, and I think that, challenge it and come and take part. Help us make this the thing that it should be to represent what the school and the theater is moving towards.
Yeah, and come talk to us about what we could change and improve to make you feel more included, because we have... Yeah, our biases and views, and we're updating them and learning.
So May 11th, the next Lady Jam for all who are welcome to perform if you identify as female. We want you to come and share in this experience with us and just help celebrate everything that we're moving forward with in the theater and in the school.
What's everybody doing, everybody else doing in the theater?
I currently host Teacher Feature, which used to be Hot for Teachers. Speaking of updating, said, let's not promote
getting the hots
lusting
for your teacher.
It's called Teacher Feature. That's on Wednesdays. I'm in a show called Damned If You Do on Fridays at Hell's Kitchen. And then my team Iggins performs on Sunday nights at the East Village Theater at 9:15. That's Iggins, the Instagram show.
Iggins.
I perform on Tuesdays with Ice Cold Bev on Herald Night. I perform around the country with UCB Torco. We also do a show once a month on Wednesdays at the Beast. And I also host the regular UCB Pajama Jam the two last Wednesdays of every month at UCB East at 11.
Is everyone coming in pajamas?
No. So sorry. You can. You can do whatever you want. Wear whatever you want. Dress what makes you feel comfortable.
I just got so excited.
I love pajamas.
Onesies, baby.
Talk about being able to do a wheelbarrow. I also am on Tourco with Lily, and we travel around the country, have a show once a month at the Beast. I am on Bucky every Friday at 7:30. Thank fuck it's Friday. Come check it out. And I also perform almost every Saturday. You can check the calendar for Blank the Musical, which is not affiliated with UCB. But it's a... I know. Can you believe
can
it?
Can we do that?
I have to do it. I'm so proud of it.
You have to.
It's an hour and a half improvised musical with a band, and it is at the Broadway Comedy Club on Saturday nights.
Wow.
Okay, then speaking of Instagram show...
How dare? No, we can't.
I cut off Monique. I'm just kidding.
No, but we can't, because I have like a couple shows out. We cannot do other... theaters, can we?
Yes, do it.
Oh my god. Okay, well, here at UCB, I'm on Characters Welcome, so that's every third Monday of the month. Lots of fun at UCB East. And then I'm on then Astronomy Club is every second Monday at UCB East, hanging out at Astronomy Club all the time. And I also host a monthly stand-up comedians versus experts show at Caveat called The Unteachables. It's really fun. Our next one.
Fine.
I don't say the date of the next one because we don't know when this is coming out, but it's monthly, and check the website. Okay.
Yeah, I think if we don't promote things that are outside the theater, we don't sound yeah. as well-rounded as we are.
Yeah. Because we do a lot of stuff here, and we do a lot of stuff outside of it. And if you want to look at my stuff, you can go to my website.
Yes!
www.lilydid.com, because my name was taken, so I had to do a pun.
That's funny.
I really want Instagram followers more than almost any other kind of career success, more than Twitter followers, more than
really?
Gigs. So when you said Instagram show, I was like, on Instagram, I'm Lily_D. Follow me on Instagram.
Me too. Follow me at Nutella_cartel. underscore at Nutella cartel.
I might quit Instagram because I recently quit Facebook, so don't even fucking worry about it.
As long as you don't announce that shit. I was so mad at everybody that's like,
I didn't.
I am officially leaving Facebook.
I hereby renounce. I mean, I'm announcing it right now on this podcast. But
follow me too on Instagram, JM0M0, Jamomo.
Oh my God.
Figure it out. We did it all out of order. Find who's who.
Yeah. Figure it out. That's us.
That's us. Thanks, guys, for tuning in. Take care. Bye-bye.
My palate cleansed.
You've been listening to the UCB Long Form Conversations podcast on the UCB Comedy Podcast Network. If you like this podcast, please subscribe and review at itunes.com/UCB Comedy. The opinions expressed in this episode are those of the comedians talking and don't necessarily reflect the opinions of UCB Theater or Training Center. Find cutting edge comedy videos on YouTube and Vimeo at UCB Comedy. Find our live shows at UCBtheater.com and connect with us on social media at UCB Comedy.